We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Getting the pole position in Indy.
The pole's position.
It's time for pole's position.
So the number one pick, by the way, for the Bears is secured.
Brought to you by Black Diamond Plumbing and Mechanical. There when you need it.
The Chicago Bears are on the clock.
What will Ryan Poles do with the number one pick?
You guys are drafting Caleb Williams number one overall.
We'll see.
Congratulations.
You did it.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
You did it. Okay, so.
We're counting down the days to the NFL draft.
Two picks. Wow.
With the ninth pick, the Chicago Bears select
9999.
So I listened to pole's position for the last 3 months, every single day, because apparently I don't need to get anywhere with my life. And it's been fantastic.
Chicago Bears select.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Thank you for hanging out with us each and every day at this time. We do a little thing called Pole's Position.
We do. Lawrence and Tanny combined to tease some Mike Tomlin Pole's Position thing for 3 o'clock. So I was listening extra closely to the open. I heard the McAfee drop as Tanny is constantly updating. But I don't think tease not paid off yet, correct?
I wouldn't pay off a tease in an open.
Okay.
So we'll get to it in the segment here. God. Time spent listening.
If I had attended SAP 101 that Tanny teaches.
You've done this before, though, right? You're aware of, yeah.
Well, yeah, I am.
But okay.
You said 3 o'clock, Danny. It's 3:03. Okay.
He did. So, but it's a whole segment in the 3 o'clock segment.
The difference between you and me is that I actually listen to the producers. Okay. So when they say something,
Let's pull the producers on which one of us listens to the producers.
Oh, Shane, 1, 2, 3. Neither of you. Okay.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Noted.
Sorry, I didn't let you answer, Shane. Yeah. I think you'd be comfortable with that.
Yeah, no, hypothetical. I mean, not hypothetical, rhetorical.
Happy birthday.
All right.
I don't know. Come Danny's on. Gotten a better job at breaking on time. He's good at it. And then when speeds you're driving, I understand you're not used to it.
Right.
But sometimes you also just look at me and then just say, no, I'm good.
There are a couple disasters. It's true. I drive like a champ. I'm more of a Sunday morning driver, to be honest. There's less traffic out there.
No turn signal, you know, spilling coffee.
Literally. Casual.
It's much more casual in that realm. Hit and run was fun on Sunday. All right, carry on.
Was there any bump and run?
No, none at all, as a matter of fact. No pick and roll, no dump and chase, nothing like that.
It was just straight baseball talk.
Straight up hit and run.
Yeah.
It was rock solid.
Whatever you want. But we figure when Ryan Poles speaks,
thank you.
We should, we're like, oh, we're trying to get inside his mind. He's actually letting us in a little bit.
It's right here for us.
And the idea of what we've been talking about since the season ended with Justin Fields and the trade and the market and the entire thing, in just a clean 80 seconds, Ryan Poles addresses how it had to happen, why it happened, and how he felt about it.
There is a business part to it, and it's not something where just because you trade someone doesn't mean you don't like them or don't appreciate them. Man, I said that we thought that was the best move for where we're at.
Ryan, over the last week,
why do you think it didn't work out?
There's a lot to unpack there. You know, I think, you know, if you go through the whole deal, like in the very beginning, I think that was a choppy start, you know, rookie year. And then when I came in, you know, we had some cleaning up to do, which then delayed another year of adding talent and supporting. And then just in terms of the game, you know, I feel like he was making strides and improving. The problem is, and it's really, and that's what I try to explain, it wasn't just a verse one of these rookies, it's really the timeline and how much runway that you have, because really to get a guy up off the ground, you need to support him with as much talent as possible. And then that flips, because then they take so much cap space, which is a good thing if you get to that point, but then they have to be the reason you start winning. So then it's harder to add the talent, you know, around them. And you can look around the league, and it happens a lot. And really, the teams that can sustain success through that period, I think, do a really special job.
So that's just so money to me. It's not Justin alone versus rookie capabilities alone, as we always knew, and it got talked to death. But there's the guy who made the decision, admitting the unfairness of the first 2 years that included him having to clean up the roster. And now you're dealing with timeline and runway and how much you end up having to pay them. And that's what made this an unfair fight for Justin Fields in terms of his progression.
Yep. We were on all of that. And I always say the NFL in some ways is like the simplest league to follow. Cap floor, cap ceiling, everyone's got to basically spend the same amount of money. And so you got to get the most production from the people that you pay the most money to. And that can dictate a lot of your decisions. Oh, this guy is starting to not produce as much, but he's a veteran, so he's making a bunch of money. He either needs to restructure his contract or he's going to get cut. It just happened. It's the reason Keenan Allen's a Bear. Mm-hmm. They asked him to restructure. He said no, so they trade him.
It's the reason L'Jarius Sneed is getting traded.
He's a Titan.
From the Chiefs.
Correct.
Because Pat Mahomes is making so much, and they've chosen a couple other people, and then you have to make terrible sacrifices.
Yeah, but they're still the favorites to be in the Super Bowl next year. Because they have Patrick Mahomes.
Because everybody knows that guy is going to be a reason they win, and they could survive lesser players at other spots.
Exactly. And the other part of it is, Poles is a classy dude. He wanted to do right by Justin. He's not going to just come out and say, and oh yeah, by the way, Caleb Williams is better. He's not going to say it.
No.
But if the league thought that Justin was as good as Caleb Williams, he would have been traded for more than a sixth round pick. No, not maybe, because great players. I mean, Aaron Rodgers at 40 years old was traded for a first round pick because he's awesome. You know what I mean? He was expensive and he's awesome. So he gets traded for a ton. There's not a long runway with Aaron Rodgers. He takes up a huge percentage of the cap. Now part of the reason why Justin hasn't been able to prove that he's consistently awesome is because of the things we talked about and that Poles mentioned there. Bumpy rookie year, dead cap space in the second year. But you notice Ryan Poles didn't say anything about last year.
No, because that was a full off season. Here's what we're going to do. We gave you a number one wide receiver. We drafted a right tackle. And oh, by the way, the defense got better. And especially the last seven games, you had as fair a shake as you could have ever dreamed, frankly.
So,
it's not about wins and losses. It's about how you performed in those last seven games.
So I think he left a lot out.
He did.
In that answer. But what he said, there were people that were saying, the money doesn't matter. Justin's still cheap in year four. No, of course it matters.
But there's also room, which he expressed, for the empathy for Justin and for the understanding that the league does you wrong. And that you know, Justin did not get a fair shake in those first couple years. And that's tough, that the timeline just didn't work out in his favor to give him enough time.
So that is Ryan Poles on the trade of Justin Fields.
That's good closure from him. You know, whether it's closure for listeners or for fans, I don't know. But clearly Poles is comfortable with the closure.
All right, here's Mike Tomlin on the guy who's acquiring Justin Fields.
Oh, my gosh, man. He oozes talent and potential. He's worn the responsibility of being a franchise quarterback, but still he gets an opportunity to come into a community-like situation and learn from a guy that's been doing it for over a decade. Man, there's a lot of meat left on that bone, man. I'm just excited about working to be a part of extracting it. We're not resistant to competition, but as I've mentioned several times of late, I just think it's appropriate to establish positioning as we get into this thing. And
here I come.
The term that I've used is Russell has pole position. And why do I use that term? Because during this time where we're not formally working, man, I just think it's beneficial. His experience in the National Football League, his process that's been honed and perfected, talking about over a 12-month calendar, is not only good for him, it's good for teams. It's good for receivers, tight ends, running backs, et cetera. All the things that people that are really committed to winning do this time of year. Russell has those resources, man, that structure And so that's why I say he has pole position, man. It just creates a synergy that I think is good for this time of year. When it's time to compete, we get in training camp-like settings and going to preseason stadiums and so forth. Obviously, Justin will be given an opportunity to show his capabilities.
Did you feel like the Bears put him in the best position to succeed?
I'm not judging anything that was done in Chicago. That's not my business. I just look at the pedigree of the talent, the things that are not relative to coaching.
Mike, you mentioned there's a lot of meat on the bone, you feel like, with Justin. What can you and Arthur and Russell do to help him reach his potential that maybe couldn't be done in Chicago?
I haven't met him yet in a professional setting, so we'll handle all of those things in a very natural way. We're excited about having him.
Pole position. I love that Russell Wilson has the full console version of pole position.
The term that I've used is pole position.
I mean, that's got to be so much fun for him and Sierra and his whole family.
It's amazing.
It's incredible. Sit down, babe. Let's play some pole position.
He's a fan. It's a,
of the segment
yeah.
and the game.
Of all of it.
So cool.
It's great.
I want to play pole position.
Absolutely.
Kenny Pickett, not really a fan.
No.
That's what made him want that trade.
Right.
Yeah. Because
he heard about the pole position
yeah.
and he's like, no, Giants don't want it.
He has a console version of pole position. I want no part of that room.
The term that I've used is pole position.
I mean, the quarterback room is pretty full, especially when you fit the console in there. It's as big as a double wide, one must assume.
That actually made me think that Justin's going to get a chance to start.
At some point.
A legit chance to start. And he'll get to prove to what he can do, and maybe he'll be able to beat out Russell Wilson this stage.
I hope so. I absolutely hope so.
Because you said it's the last we'll hear from Poles on it, and it was closure for him.
It's closure for him, yeah.
Yeah, the only way it isn't is if Justin balls out in Pittsburgh and Caleb struggles. Then there will be some second-guessing questions and some C.J. Stroud line of questions and that sort of thing.
Well, that's true. But in terms of, like, the decision that was looming over this entire
yes.
offseason.
Yeah, no, the process that led to this moment.
Yeah, by the way, the Steelers just signed Cordarrelle Patterson.
And we'll talk to Mike Pereira about the new kickoff yeah. rule and the new, but more the tackling rule coming up in 25 minutes. But a great return, man.
A great return, man. I just realized, I hadn't thought about it, but Velus Jones Jr. just made the team, didn't he?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we will, unless they can figure out a way to upgrade from him as a returner.
Oh, man, he's a pretty good kickoff returner.
Yeah. As long as he can catch the ball and hold on to it. So Ryan Poles went full into the meeting with Caleb Williams.
Ryan, over the last week, what have you learned about Caleb Williams that you need to know in this draft process?
Yeah, I will say when you talk to his teammates, they don't like him. They love him. His leadership, how he brings people together. He's intentional with his leadership. Same goes with his staff. I'm having a hard time finding a person that doesn't like him or even love him and thinks, you know, that he can reach the highest limits. So the feedback's been good.
Do you have the top 30 for him planned already?
Yeah.
Do you know when that's going to be?
It's going to be in that first week of April. That's when our first big wave comes in, and he'll be a part of that.
What, having spent so many days out in L.A. and a big contingent from the team there, what do you hope to glean when he comes to Hallis?
Just another touch point, continue to and I've learned this over the years when guys come in, you can really do some installations, take a break, and then have them reinstall back to you just in terms of recall. Build relationships with coaches, make sure that there's compatibility there.
Since he didn't give medical at the combine, will that be the one chance you guys will have to get that information
yeah.
as well?
Yep.
How much are you maybe comparing and contrasting him still with maybe the other quarterbacks, McCarthy, May, Daniels, or is it now every information we can get?
No, we're going to continue the process. Like I said, we're going to go to LSU right from here. We'll continue to evaluate everybody. You know, I do think, as I said before, like we gain clarity as we move forward, which is a good thing. But we also want to make sure that we continue and finish the process with the rest of the class.
All right, North Carolina too?
Our can't make that one, but our quarterback coach and some of my executives will be there.
Ryan, when you say he's intentional with his leadership, what's an example of things that you've heard or seen that tell you that?
Yeah, you know, we look for guys that can bring others around. So the cool thing, you know, there's pros and cons of this NIL setup, but the cool thing is you do have some resources to, you know, take your O-line out to dinner. You know, you see the Christmas gifts that the NFL guys do. So really bringing those guys together, spending time, creating that bond is really what you're looking for in that position, and he's done that.
What was he like at dinner the couple nights before that his pro day with his teammates then?
Yeah, really mature. One of my guys kind of bumped me on it, which I think is rare these days for a 22-year-old. He never touched his ball. So really intentional with his conversations and, you know, talking about his interests and things that he likes to do. So really good touch point.
The draft is 1 month from today. Do you know when, or at least ideally, when you would have your decision made about who you're taking?
I don't right now. Hopefully it just hits me.
But Ryan, how different is it working with a player, or getting to know a player in this NIL era, and then specifically with Caleb, somebody who does not have an agent?
Yeah, with the NIL deal, again, there's pros and cons. I'm starting to learn that I think for us, when we gather information, it's actually pretty helpful. It puts these guys in the spotlight, it gives them more responsibility, it forces them to prioritize money, business, football, school, how do they handle that, what kind of structures they put around them to make sure that they're making good decisions, they have people that can say no, like, that's not gonna fit in my timeline. So I think there's some positives there, and I'm picking that up.
And then him not having an agent, is that something that I guess you guys know now, so you can kind of prepare for that? Is that unique as well?
Yeah, unique situation. I understand it, though. So, you know, with the draft process, you know, it doesn't make it too difficult. There's some little things, communication, and just understanding the landscape of that. That's probably one of the more negative things. But there's probably a lot of pros, too, in his situation specifically.
Ryan, you've been very forthright in expressing your confidence in Fluce. Mm-hmm. When you look at the quarterback development part of it specifically, what gives you the most confidence in him and the group he's assembled to oversee the development of a young quarterback?
Yeah, I would say first, I don't think everyone really gets a good view of it. Fluce does an amazing job building relationships, and I think whoever that is, like, there's going to be a relationship where you know your head coach has your back. And I think that's important. The other piece is just very forward thinking. We both are, in terms of creating structure to make sure with a young quarterback, especially in our market, that we do set him up for success. I know for sure that the roster is going to do that. It's important to me to make sure that there's enough around where he can get off to a fast start and build confidence. But at the same time, Shane, Fluce, Carey, like, they have a good plan too. We have Thomas Brown, who's in Carolina, so he's had some exposure to, you know, a high pick, you know, early. So I think really collectively the whole group's gonna do a really good job.
What resonated with you about Shane?
Happy birthday, Mike.
There it is. There it is. Happy birthday again to Shane.
Man, a lot of good stuff in there, isn't it?
Yeah. The agent thing, I think he was candid about it. You know, there are some things that will make it more difficult, but there's a lot of positives. Positives are probably more player-centric, that doesn't have to cut a commission on a thing that's collectively bargained there. But Caleb also, he's got a publicity team. He has business managers. He has lawyers.
Yeah.
He's done all of these NIL deals. It's not like Ryan, he just was talking about how he's got to learn it. Like, we saw Ryan Poles talking to Carl Williams, Caleb's dad, mm-hmm. at the pro day. We saw all of those people that Caleb was dapping up after the throwing session. Some of those people, I'm sure, are the point person. You know, Ryan Poles is just going to have to learn, hey, who's the person that I call with a question about this for Caleb Williams if I don't go directly to the player? It's not that Caleb doesn't have that person. He just doesn't have an NFLPA certified agent.
A late mention there from Ryan Poles about a guy I'm really intrigued by and we've talked about a little, and that's Thomas Brown, the passing game coordinator.
Yeah.
And in this process, he's super helpful and important because he was with Carolina when they scouted and chose Bryce Young and went through that whole process, was in those rooms as an offensive assistant and then the offensive coordinator, and can bring a lot of stuff that maybe he learned from last year and going through all of that in Carolina, including the chaotic year. And oh, by the way, Sean McVay loves Thomas Brown, thinks he's got big time head coaching material, and that, and might be more so than Shane Waldron in that way. So Thomas Brown, big asset for many levels of the organization at this point.
Mike Pereira in 20 minutes, but we need to examine something that has been on this radio station and deserves attention. Next on The Score.
And now you're listening to Perkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Teams are different. The
you know, I've used this analogy for a long time, but it's, there's a soup made, and it, you know, it can be the same players, but it's going to taste a little different next year when grandma makes it. You know what I mean?
We do know what you mean.
Sit down, have some Cubs soup. Hey!
Little soup.
It's delicious.
It's going to be great. Cold outside, you need a cup of soup.
Yeah.
Right? It warms warms you up.
That weird house that's still there on Waveland across from the firehouse.
Yeah.
I assume that's where grandma lives and makes the soup.
Sure.
I assume.
Well, everybody gets ready for baseball in different ways, right? Some people watch their favorite baseball movie.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, you know, get the tickets, maybe line up your outfit.
Some people have a fantasy draft at 8:30 Central.
Fantasy draft. Some people salute. Some people go to Arizona.
That's true.
People do things.
Some people would just like get right to football season. Some people.
Some people.
I'm one side of town. I think I speak for a lot of them.
I believe you.
Well, I assume that in Traverse City they're pretty excited this time.
Oh, yeah, we are.
So
how do you get excited, Danny?
I follow our fearless leaders here at the Score, Spigs.
Yeah.
You know, me. I was a company man. I've never upset management in any way. And so I just follow what the radio station tells me. And, you know, we're the home of the Cubs baseball right here on the Score. We're proud of it.
Damn right.
Damn it. And, you know, you produce promos for it, right? You're listening to the home of Cubs baseball on 670 The Score.
Those liners that they drop in during the broadcast, absolutely.
I do, too. And I'm like, I think we did a great job this year.
Surprised they let you.
But apparently, that's not enough.
No.
No.
We need from a higher tax bracket.
So we went as a radio station. We found the best. We found a gentleman who goes, and this is true, by Thunderballs. This is the type of work that Thunderballs does.
From the studio that delivered the Lego movie.
This is going to be great, guys.
One baby.
Storks don't deliver babies anymore.
Has to find its flock. Storks. For two brothers.
Open the drawers!
Justice is not a crime.
We ain't sent from you, we're sent from the bank.
Hell or High Water. Rated R.
That's a fun movie.
August 12th.
We're chosen!
There'll be a party.
Potato! Way to go, buddy!
In your pantries.
Get ready, boys!
Sausage Party.
First of all, I love Sausage Party. It's a great movie. So now I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking, this is a joke. This is one of the show where things happen. This is a bit. This is one of your wacky radio stunts.
I don't know, man. That voice sounded familiar.
No. Yeah, the guy's name is Thunderballs. Those are the movie promos that he actually does. He was commissioned to promote the upcoming Cubs season, which is why you're hearing this.
The 2024 Chicago Cubs, a promising new season with lofty expectations, begins Thursday in Texas, including a Gold Glove dynamic duo of Nico Horner.
Diving backhand stump by Horner, throws to first to get him.
And Dansby Swanson.
Bare handing it to Swanson, and he throws him out at first.
Plus, comeback player of the year, Cody Bellinger.
Get out the tape measure, long gone.
And the Man of Steel, your opening day starting pitcher, Justin Steele.
Swing and a miss, strike three. Justin Steele.
And now, a new leader in the dugout, Craig Counsell.
I'm a fresh set of eyes for them.
You can be a big help being a fresh set of eyes.
A new season begins Thursday, and you have to hear it right here on your home of the Cubs, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh. And in Chicagoland, live on the free Odyssey app.
Who among us has not dreamed of sounding like that?
Too much?
Oh.
Not enough?
No way.
Not enough?
It's way over the top, but so is opening day. Let's go. In a world.
A Gold Glove dynamic duo of Nico Horner and Dansby Swanson.
We got the wrong
plus
stuff?
Comeback player of the year, Cody Bellinger.
Oh, yeah. Inject that into my veins. Let's go.
With strong defense up the middle.
Yeah, I mean.
And a guy who used to be bad, but then was good again. Make up the 88 win.
Now,
Chicago
come on.
Cubs.
You've got more base than I do. Have you never spent time as a youth, post-puberty, of course, imagining yourself as the Thunderballs type voicing the movie promos?
I don't have to imagine it. It's my reality.
And the Man of Steel, your opening day starting pitcher, Justin Steele.
Hell yeah. Let's go.
On their quest to win the worst division in the National League.
Oh, come on.
Come the Chicago Cubs.
And now, a new leader in the dugout, Craig Counsell.
Managers make all the difference. Big fan of soup. Our problems are over. We're the Cubs on the radio.
Wait, Tanny, why didn't we just have Danny do it?
I should have.
What do we have Thunderballs do it for when Danny's right there doing
it? I should have. I'm available.
Oh, man.
Thunderballs. Did it scare you guys the first time you heard it? Or did you hear think it was a joke?
Yeah, I heard it yesterday morning on the stream, walking the dogs, and it terrified the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to brag. Mitch pulled me in the office last week and showed it to me. So.
Of course he did.
Yeah. Sat things only, baby.
Sat biz. You know, it's a little sat biz.
Sat things only.
Yeah.
You know,
where was the Jap?
I've long been fascinated with those people.
Junior audio producer.
Don LaFontaine. Did you ever see the movie In a World? It's all about voice actors doing that. And then Ernie Anderson is the ABC voice who used to do Coming Up on Saturday Night. Love Boat. That guy. That's the movie director Paul Thomas Anderson's father. So, like, imagine having the job that Thunderballs does. Are these people where you're just hanging out in your home studio, turning out gold from your balls.
I've got to make Sausage Party sounds like a high-minded comedy.
And he does.
And I'm successful at it.
Oh, man.
A Gold Glove dynamic duo of Nico Horner, rated R.
Oh, Nico!
Is his season going to be rated R?
Do we get to play this? When's Nico coming on to kick off the season?
Probably tomorrow. Just don't have time yet from him.
We got to play this for Nico Horner tomorrow.
And Dansby Swanson, rated R.
Real quick note from Mitch, by the way. Thunderballs, apparently his friends, they call him TB.
Rated R.
Of course. Hey, what's up, Balls? How are you? Hey, T-Balls.
Balls. Thunderballs did the Cubs promo on the radio.
That's hot.
All right. Let's talk to Mike Pereira about hip drops next on The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Parkinson Spiegel. Yeah. Sounds like the law firm you call when you get a parking ticket.
Afternoons on The Score.
I like spicy Mike Pereira. You know, Mike gets in there, throws a little spice in there.
Great rules guy. A great rules guy.
Oh, man. Nothing gets you ready for opening day like talking to Mike Pereira about some football rules changes in the offseason.
We'll get this out of the way. We'll do MLB rule changes either tomorrow or the next day before opening day.
Joining us now, you can see him on Twitch and our YouTube stream. He's also on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline, is the head rules analyst for Fox Sports, Mike Pereira. Hi, Mike.
Hi, guys. How are you? Long time no talk to.
Nice to have you. This is super interesting stuff, so we're very glad to have you, as a matter of fact.
I saw the video that was shared in the room at the meetings about the hip drop tackle, and the data was compelling on the number of injuries that come from it and all for making the game safer. But I got to say, I watch a lot of football, and a lot of those tackles, I couldn't tell what it was. What is your opinion of outlawing the hip drop tackle and how difficult this will be, if at all, to officiate?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty much for everything player safety. And this was very reminiscent to me back to the Roy Williams horse collar tackle when we watched various leg injuries at a competition committee meeting. Happy to say it was in Hawaii that year. But the injuries that it created, it's the same type of action that you're getting here with the hip drop tackle. The difference to me is, the Roy Williams thing, we said right off the bat, he could have done this differently. He didn't have to grab the inside of the collar and pull down and swing his legs behind like that. To me, this is a little bit more difficult to try to tell a player what to do who maybe is coming from the side, and the natural body movement, you know, might create that fall into the back of the leg. So I think this is more difficult on a defensive player trying to figure out how to make a tackle. Yet in this day of player safety, I would have a hard time disagreeing with the actual change itself. I think the problem for me is it's kind of like illegal use of the helmet. It's so hard to figure on the field as an official in real time whether or not it's a foul. And while I applaud the league for making replay reviewable of roughing the passer calls this year, making it reviewable to the intentional grounding calls, whether you're in and out of the pocket, I don't know why they didn't go and include this. And so if it's thrown on the field and you can see, if you're trained and you're in the replay center and you can see it's not a hip drop, then to me, I think they should have been able to review it and take it off if in fact it was incorrectly called. But we know in this day and age of player safety that that's the big focus of the league, regardless of whether the Players Association like the rule change or not. Player safety is going to win out with the owners.
Mike, there's some happenstance with leading with the helmet if a runner happens to drop their body position at just the right time. Is there happenstance with the hip drop in terms of the defender just thinking, all I got to do is get there, grab the person, and then use my body weight to fall? Does the competition committee think that this is always intentional? Here I go with my hip drop tackle right now.
I don't think they thought it was intentional. I mean, I can't get inside Rich McKay's head, but I think it's just a tactic that they felt was dangerous. When you're trying to bring down a runner, I mean, this is not easy. Now, I was already taking the head out of the game pretty much. And so now you're saying lower body, that now becomes an issue in making the tackle too. So I do think it's going to be more difficult. And a lot of the face masks aren't intentional. I mean, you're sometimes warding off a block and you reach out and you grab the face mask. You're not trying to hurt anybody, but you're just trying to make a play. And the hip drop, to me, more is trying to make a play than the horse collar or even like the face mask. But there was substantial injury data, which really drives these changes like this. And so I'm not surprised. And players will figure it out. And I think it'll be something that results more in fines than it does with fouls,
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm sorry to interrupt. That was what my next question was going to be, because I thought Roger Goodell said something that really interesting. He said, when we had the lowering of the head penalty added, there was a transition period. We're going to make sure that the officials are comfortable that when they see something clear and obvious, they throw the flag. And in a question to, like, what about if they miss the call during the games? He said, otherwise, we'll see it on videotape. We'll see it on tape Monday and deal with it in fines and discipline. So I'm wondering, like, is that in the back of a ref's mind? Like, do we think that we actually are not going to watch this happen on Sundays and then players are just going to have their wallet impacted on Tuesdays?
I think there's a chance of that. I'm just trying to grab a quick look to see how many of the illegal helmet calls were made this year. But I would say that fines to calls on the field are like 5-1 fines. It's the nature of the beast. You know, the committee, well, they try to take into consideration how difficult it is to officiate some of these rule changes. And this would be one. You know, there aren't players on the competition committee. There aren't officials on the competition committee. Yes, the head of officiating is a non-voting member, but you know, they don't take into regard how difficult something to officiate is. And so I really do think, and I haven't heard Walt Anderson's instructions to the officials yet, and he's not really given them yet, but I think he's going to say, don't throw unless you are absolutely sure where you see that action, maybe where the runner gets dragged all the way to the ground, as opposed to just the legs buckling. So I think, you know, it's going to remain to be seen. Roger's probably right. Players are adjusted. I mean, I remember the Eugene Robinson play the first year it came when came into the lowering of the helmet. And I publicly said, this is a bad rule. I was already gone from the office by then, so I could say that. but I didn't know Roger Goodell was listening to what I said, because he called and ripped me a new one. But players did adjust to a degree, but in bang bang situation, my gosh, if you're a if you're a corner trying to take down a fullback or something, and you know, pretty damn hard to get him to the ground. And I just think there's going to be situations where we all say, what else could he do?
Right.
That's always the thing. What else can he do? Well, you got to figure out something. Just let him run, I guess. I don't know. player safety has certainly changed the game, including, you know, what we're seeing now in terms of kickoffs.
Players' safety and a desire for offense. If you need anybody to call Roger Goodell and rip him a new one on your behalf, we got your back. All right, Mike?
I've got the number if you want to call.
Yeah,
we do.
But we'll get it after the segment. Yes, please. Thank you so much.
I was just going to give it out now.
Go ahead. That's fine.
Yeah, sure. That's fine. Didn't know how far we were into the Tito's. That's why I wasn't sure. Mike, you mentioned the kickoff. Have they found a sweet spot here where the new kickoff rule will make it more impactful and we'll see a ton more kickoffs, but it does take player safety into account? What do you think about the balance they're trying to strike here with this new rule?
I don't like the rule. I just don't like the rule. I really didn't like what the XFL did. Look, I think what's going to happen to me is, what's the return? What's the drive start going to be? That's the key. Now, we know that a touchback brought the ball out to the 25-yard line. Now you've got all these things where you kick the ball short, and if they catch it, they can't fair catch it anymore and get the ball to 25. But what now is this with players not being able to move until the ball touches the ground or a player? What's the drive start going to be? Is it going to move to the 27, 28, something like that? Therefore, kind of saying, okay, we all know how strong the kickers are. If they kick the ball into the end zone and it bounces in the end zone, I mean, then that ball goes out to the 30. So are we going to get to the point where the kickers just say, or the team say, hey, let's just kick it into the end zone. And guess what? Instead of starting at the 25, we're starting at the 30. So what's the risk reward going to be here? And I think that's what everybody's going to have to look at, is what kind of returns are you getting in this? Are we going to have more returns? Most likely, at least starting out. But if it gets to be something where these kickers can boom them out of the end zone almost every time, are they going to do it and give the ball to the receivers at the 30? It's an unknown, and that's why it's a one-year rule. Just going to have to see how it all works out. I like kickoff returns. I'd rather see a more traditional kickoff return. The Spring League is not going to this. The Spring League is going to kick off from the 20. But we've moved the players closer together, but all the action starts when the ball is kicked. So we had 91% of our kickoffs returned last year, and our injury numbers were not high at all. Now, I mean, the speed of the players in the Spring League, not as fast. The physicality of the, not as physical, but still the numbers of returns versus the number of injuries was good. So I think they'll keep dabbling in this. But it's so interesting that they wanted to get the kickoff out of the game, and they succeeded when you think that only 21% of kickoffs were returned last year. So they got it out of the game, and now they're bringing it back. And it'll probably take a couple of years till they tweak it and figure out what really works best.
So there's a gambling scandal in baseball right now. There's a gambling scandal in the NBA right now. The richest player in baseball is involved in it. One of the players at the least end of the earning spectrum is involved in it. We've seen it with refs before, obviously prominently in the NBA. What's the chatter among the relationship between the league and the officials about gambling and the prevalence of legalized gambling?
I think the NFL is comfortable. I remember when it happened with Tim Donaghy in the NBA. I remember Roger Goodell storming down into my office and saying, okay, the good news is it wasn't us. Now, let's pretend like it was. And what steps can we take to protect the officials from any outside influence? How can we make sure that this is not going to happen, at least to the best of our ability? So we sat down and did. We said, okay, if it was us, what could have caused it? Well, we gave the assignments out for the entire season right off the bat. So an officiating crew knew they were going to Detroit in week 15. And so if they knew it, then other people would probably know it, and it would give gamblers maybe more time to get to the official. So we said, okay, let's knock that process off. And let's only give out assignments 1 week at a time and only basically 3 weeks before the game. And so then we looked at it and said, how often are we checking background checks with the officials? It was like every 3 years. And said, okay, well, let's eliminate that. And let's check everybody's background, do complete background checks every season. And then, of course, with, you know, games being played in Vegas, you know, we actually, the CBA got strengthened into when an official can go into Las Vegas or any gambling establishment and when they cannot and when they have to report it, all that kind of thing. So I'm not one that says it's never going to happen, but I think the NFL has done a really good job of tightening the screws and making sure that, you know, all the officials know that they are done if anything like this happens. Look, they're drug tested 3 or 4 times a year, and then they're going to be tested with their background check every year. I just don't see it happening. And I also say that the one thing we did good is we checked everybody's background. We brought them in, and we brought in successful people. We brought in attorneys. We brought in investment people. We brought in the type of people that we thought were good officials, but also that we thought would not be susceptible to a bribe. Because of their success and because of their other job that they have. So I'm confident that that's something that we're not going to see, hopefully, anywhere with officials. But I'm certainly confident that we won't see it with the NFL.
Mike Pereira, thank you for always answering our call and our questions about the rule changes. Thank you, sir.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Head of Officiating and Rules Analysis for Fox Sports, Mike Pereira.
That's a tremendous resource and a great friend of the show, made and cultivated by our guy, the birthday boy who loves the attention, Shane Reardon. Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Give
we
it up.
Break.
I was thinking we had to
last
do it.
Last time I saw that, it was Shane Reardon in a media game.
Last time.
I was thinking we were going to do it once an hour, and we already did it for 3, but I like it, beginning of the hour and the end of
yeah,
the hour.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's
just,
good.
Just to remind
it's
him.
It's his birthday.
Especially now that we know he didn't like it.
Want to make him feel special? Cubs and Sox bets next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.